Hi. Welcome to an hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo, and we are going to give you some dynamic insights into how you can make your life better during this hour of Mind Power, the Donna Sebo Show. And I'd like for you to have a pad of paper and a pen handy. That's almost something that I consider mandatory when you're listening to this broadcast, because you're always going to hear things that you're going to want to make a note about. And also, this is one note you want to make, 877-876-5227. That's our toll-free number you'll be able to call into later on in the hour, 877-876-5227. My guest today, Mr. George Kohlreiser, he's a psychologist, hostage negotiator, professor of leadership. This man has accomplished a great deal in his life, and in fact, very soon, he's going to be involved with teaching people on staff at the United Nations. His book, which is a powerfully written book, Hostage at the Table. Now, this is sort of thing around what you're thinking, hostage at the table. That's very graphic as an image. But this is about how leaders can overcome conflict, influence others, and raise performance. And I can tell you, after having read the book, it can empower you as an individual in ways that you would not have thought possible. Welcome, Mr. Kohlreiser. Do you mind if I call you George?
That's wonderful, Donna. Thank you for that warm introduction.
Well, I mean it with utmost sincerity, because I can tell you my yellow highlighter throughout this book. I mean, I ran out of yellow.
That's wonderful. It matches the cover.
Yes, it does. And what is so powerful, I think, about your book is that you come not just from your own professional positioning and experience, which I want you to go into a little bit, but we're in a world today that is filled with so much anger and so much animosity, hate. I was talking with some people this morning, and this is something that has come out. There's just this abundance of it, and it's our biggest enemy. I've always said three of our biggest enemies are ignorance, superstition, and fear. But maybe hate should be added to that so that it's part of that package. How did you get involved as a hostage negotiator?
Well, it's an interesting story, Donna. I was still in my graduate studies in the late 60s, and I was asked to join a special project to prevent domestic violence. So I was a young psychologist going out with police officers into homes trying to reduce the homicide rate. And after doing that for about 3 years, it soon became clear we also needed to have hostage negotiating teams. And the police chief in Dayton, Ohio asked me to help set up a team. And the rest of the story is just that it grew from one event after another to where I was involved in training, and have been fortunate to be able to work around the world in not just hostage negotiation, but also and primarily conflict resolution.
You have a quote by William Blake: to see a world in a grain of sand and a heaven in a wild flower, hold infinity in the palm of your hand and eternity in an hour. That is very poignant, because when I think of those individuals that are hostage negotiators, that small grouping of words has an impact, because a second, of reaction, improper reaction, of whatever, can lead to disaster. You make a statement that you never ever carried a gun when you did your negotiations, and that your best weapon was words, talking, listening, dialogue, and negotiating. What was the greatest need in your observation when you were in these situations that had to be filled?
It was self-mastery, Don. It's what you are talking about, I think, in your programs often, how to manage your own emotions and how to manage the focus. And if you do that, from there, it's possible then to engage in a bonding process. And I think the greatest learning I've had over my career is this idea that we can create a bond even with someone we don't like, even with someone that we despise. A good hostage negotiator must create that emotional bond and build a bridge, and through that talk and dialogue, to persuade the hostage taker to give up their weapons and come out with the hostages being free, knowing they're probably going to go to prison. And the science and the art of this, Donna, is just an incredible process because hostage negotiators get about a 95% success rate, except if you're in Iraq or Afghanistan, of course. But under normal circumstances, it's a highly, highly effective process. And what struck me is that those principles can be used by leaders and just about everyone in order to not be taken metaphorically a hostage, because you don't have to have a gun to your head to feel like a hostage. People feel this way every day.
That is so true. And that is what I love about your book, because I think it addresses this in this feeling of being a hostage. And you're right. There are people that are feeling this way every day. You might not think that, but they are really, they may look perfectly normal, whatever that's supposed to be. I haven't figured that one out yet. But that is, you know, the appearances belie what's going on inside of them.
Yeah.
In the very first chapter, the very first page, you have a story that absolutely gave me chills when I finished reading it, about a grandmother and her granddaughter and a particular experience. And this occurred in Kansas. Can you share that experience with my audience?
It's an incredible story. I still get goosebumps when I tell that story.
Awesome.
Here is a true story of a grandmother who wakes up in the middle of the night with a man standing over her bed with a club ready to kill her. She wakes up. Now, that's a stressful moment, and the question is, what would you, I, or any of us listening to your program say? Her response was, "Oh, you must be cold," and it was indeed cold. And she grabbed the hand of her granddaughter, who was also in bed with her, and gave a sign it's okay. She followed with another sentence that said, "You must be hungry. Let me make you some food." They walked into the kitchen. She made soup. They sat and talked, totally ignoring the danger. And at the end of this, she said, "Now you must stay inside. It's snowing outside. You're going to catch a cold." And she made a place for him to sleep. The next morning when the police arrived, they were shocked to find that he was a psychopathic killer who had escaped from prison. She was alive, the granddaughter was alive, but 2 miles before coming to her house, he had brutally slaughtered a family of four, 2 parents and 2 children. And the message of this story, Donna, is something that many, many people listening to you may already naturally know. If they don't, they should know this, that this human bonding process is so fundamental. People cannot kill people. They only kill objects or things. They go through a depersonalization process every time. And that's why when you began the program talking about hate, we have so much of this depersonalization and the lack of bonding. And the power, one of the powerful messages in all the stories in this book has to do with how we can create bonds, build bridges, in order to resolve conflict.
Oh, I think that's so true. You use a couple of terms. One of them is learned helplessness. And you also have a quote, and I'm going to follow it with this, that Lao Tse wrote that the biggest problem, this was 2,500 years ago, the biggest problem in the world was that individuals experienced themselves as powerless. Learned helplessness. How can we deal with something like this? How can we unlearn helplessness?
It takes a kind of rewiring of the brain, and I know you've looked at how the neuroscience of this works in your programs, but you have to rewire your brain, and you need a model to do that, or someone to help you be aware of when you are a hostage or when you are helpless. That's the biggest problem. Many people don't know it. And here's the thing. You can have a gun to your head, Donna, and not feel like a hostage. You can talk, you can interact, you can influence, you can persuade like this grandmother. And this book is filled with these kinds of stories of people who've done this. And there are people every day who do not have a gun to their head, but they feel like a hostage. They're helpless to a boss, to a spouse, to a child, to a neighbor, you name it. What they have to do is realize they have power, and they have to learn by getting models in their brain, in their mind's eye, as I call it in this book, in order to be able to focus correctly and then practice those skills. And everyone can learn that, but it takes someone to teach or model or help someone learn that. That's why the role of parents is so critical in learning to deal with conflict. Teachers, leaders, all those people who are secure bases and have the power to influence.
My guest today is George Kohlreiser. We're speaking with him. He's in Switzerland. His book is Hostage at the Table, How Leaders Can Overcome Conflict, Influence Others, and Raise Performance. This book is one of the most powerful books I have ever read relative to the situation of negotiation, but empowering you as individuals, you, my listeners, to know how to work with your life. And he shares so many wonderful stories. Now, you've just mentioned the role of the parent and how to be able to teach, how to be a good model. You have a story about a father, and I believe it was you. Andrew, your
yes.
son, was 4. Talk about the elevator story. I love that.
Donna, I've been on many radio programs, but I must say you are the most familiar with this book of any interviewer I have had. I really appreciate that. God love you. Andrew was 4 years old, and he got stuck in an elevator with his mother. And, of course, this was stressful. They were in for about 5 minutes on a 5-story building. They pushed the alarm, or she pushed the alarm button. He came out of this very fearful of elevators. And I didn't realize it till the next day, walking to the elevator with Andrew. He just stopped, turned pale, and said, "Dad, I will not get in that elevator." I said, "Okay." We sorted out the problem. Now, how do I, as a father, help him rewire his brain, not be afraid, be a hostage to that fear, or be a hostage to the elevator? So then I worked out a strategy with my wife. The next day, I take his hand, walk to the elevator, and said, "Andrew, let's take the elevator." He says, "No, Dad, I'm not going to do that," same as the day before. I looked at him and I said, being a secure base, "Andrew, this elevator is not going to get stuck. We've checked it out. It's safe." "No, Dad," a little less assertive, and I said, "Trust me, Andrew, it is going to be okay." So we walked into the elevator. He says to the elevator, "Friend, would you like some cookies?" Because I had said to him, the elevator is like our friend, to get a good picture in his mind.
Mm-hmm.
We got downstairs, Donna, and he said, turned around and said, "Bye, friend." Now, the question is, did I lie to him? And I think I did not. Many people would say, well, you have to say, yes, there's only one chance in 5 million or whatever. But see, a parent must be a secure base, have this sense of certainty to be able to teach a child how not to be helpless, how not to be afraid, how to understand that the brain is naturally going to look for danger, and we need secure bases to help us learn how to do that. Look for the positive.
I think that is so very important. And the key there, in my mind, Hugh, when I was reading your story, is that this also was a bonding between yourself and your son.
Absolutely.
And you were saying to him, "I'm going to go in the elevator with you. I want you to trust me because I'm with you." And here he is, a little 4-year-old, taking your hand, and he's saying, "Okay." And then Dad says, "This is a friend," which is not a lie. Because the elevator is a friend. The elevator
yes.
enables you to get to various floors much more readily than if you had to take the stairs.
Exactly.
So he was a friend, but I love the part about the cookie. I just love kids. I just think they're absolutely wonderful in the way they take positionings and make up, you know, adjustments in their mind. But that enabled him to understand, yes, there are experiences in life. We're all going to have risk. None of us are going to be able to avoid risk. You get in your car, you go out, drive to the grocery store. Anything can happen. But we develop these fearful aspects. I've had them. Everybody has them.
Yeah.
And I think when we can face them with courage, it's absolutely marvelous. You have a fabulous story in here about Nelson Mandela. I think that your story about Lance Armstrong is great. But I want to talk about the 30-year international study by the Gallup Organization on Emotional Engagement at Work. And this was released in 2004. Showed that the majority of people do not feel emotionally attached to their jobs. And there is also the statement, the level of emotional attachment to the job is a direct correlation to productivity, customer satisfaction, lost work days, and turnover, key economic factors directly linked to the state of mind. and a less engaged workforce results in reduced profitability for companies. There is not a business person out there that is not examining, how can I have better productivity? What is it that can make my workforce more efficient? What can I do, if I'm a conscientious boss, to make my work environment better? This poll is quite significant. How can leaders bond with their employees? Because there is this, well, I'm the boss and they're the employee. I don't really want them in that much in my personal space. How do you do that? How do you go about it?
Oh, this is such a critical issue, and there are so many people in organizations unhappy, detached, not experiencing the pleasure of work. And the key is that immediate boss. Is that immediate boss a secure base, somebody that you can feel trust for, that you can put issues on the table, discuss things? And where bosses don't learn that, it becomes a disaster. The CEO, the new CEO of American Airlines, this incredible story, rather than do what is traditionally done, get in fights with the unions, he is sitting down with all the unions, trying to build a bridge, trying to engage a process so that they feel the bond to him, to the management process, and it works. And you see, we've had for so many years in organizations this sort of detachment, professional aloofness. Teams that are high-performing teams, they must create this emotional bond, and they must be secure bases. Maybe you remember that chapter on secure bases. We have far too many bosses who are too negative, who do not know how to build that positive, secure base. And a good leader can be tough. They can deliver tough feedback, just like a good teacher can be tough. But if they're a secure base, people will take that pain because they see the benefit of it, Donna, and they want even more. Because people are motivated to want to learn, to want to grow. But most people in organizations are just frustrated and blocked, and so they emotionally disengage.
You have a section on self-esteem, and I want to read from your book directly, Manifestations of High Self-Esteem. And this is something that goes for anybody, everybody, everywhere. Displaying a joyful attitude and happiness to be alive, having a balance between giving and receiving energy, seeking new opportunities and challenges, the ability to give and receive positive compliments, displaying spontaneity and flexibility, exhibiting a sense of playfulness, demonstrating creative reactions to problems, having satisfaction from experiences, the ability to be intimate, close to others, demonstrating that others are important, having an openness towards life in others. Now, those are wonderful, wonderful manifestations, and there are so many people that maybe one or two of those would apply, and it's something we always have to work for. How can we develop qualities like resilience? How can we go about developing this high level of self-esteem so that we don't sabotage ourselves professionally, emotionally, mentally, or spiritually?
That's an excellent question, and I think it starts with awareness. I have low self-esteem, or I'm not experiencing enough joy in life, I'm not taking enough compliments, whatever that part might be. And then develop the mindset that I will learn this. I will learn it one way or another. Read a book. Listen to a program like this. Find a therapist. Find a friend. Because the brain does not naturally resist change, Donna. I'm convinced of this. And what many people do naturally resist change because they're a hostage to their own fears. Once they overcome that, then you see they start seeking and want to learn. And then the self-esteem just naturally will expand and explore new options to build those neurons in the brain. That the brain is naturally seeking that stimulation. Children don't want to stay with the secure base of the parent. They want to go out and explore. Adults want to go out and explore. Most people are not doing that. They're not reaching the levels of high self-esteem because they're a hostage to their own fear or to a situation where they feel powerless. And I think having a teacher is so critical. because we can't use our own mindset to solve the problem. We have to learn it from some source or some way to get a new perspective and see things in a different way. And once that mindset changes, the attitude changes, then it becomes a wonderful opportunity to enjoy life. And I just recently ran across someone who was in an accident 10 years ago, lost her ability to walk, is in a wheelchair. She is resentful and bitter, and she read the book, and she said, "I didn't realize that I was a hostage, and I have decided I'm going to learn how not to be a hostage and enjoy life again, even though I'll never walk." Isn't that wonderful?
Well, that leads me to one of the most powerful stories in your book, and it's about Wilma Rudolph, the Olympic gold medalist.
Oh.
And I'd love for you to share that story. I feel that stories that can touch the heart and mind can not just feed the spirit and the soul, but can do the rewiring that you're talking about here and you're trying to explain. I would like for you to tell us how we can live with a hostage-free state of mind. Tell us about Wilma.
Well, Wilma was very young when she developed polio, and the doctors told her she would never walk again. And her mother would not accept it. She believed that something different could happen. The mother and her brothers and sisters massaged Wilma's legs every day, over and over again. They encouraged her to be able to do things. And pretty soon she was up and she was walking. She became very good at basketball and running and all kinds of things. And isn't it incredible? She ended up winning a Olympic medal. She was that able to overcome, a little bit like what was the movie, Forrest Gump.
Mm-hmm.
She was able to do this, but the key there was she had the mother who gave her the insight and the courage to keep going. And had she not even been able to win those medals and reach such a high success, and as a young black woman, she was such a beautiful model of an African-American woman who could inspire others. And that became one of her great goals, not only for her to win those medals, but to inspire others, that you don't have to be a hostage.
Absolutely true. And I would just like to add a few details about Wilma. She became the first American woman to earn 3 gold medals in the Olympics.
Yeah.
And she was considered one of the most celebrated female athletes of all time. But she retired from running when she was 22. She went on to coach women's track teams and encouraged young people. She served as a track coach, an athletic consultant, the assistant director of athletics for the Mayor's Youth Foundation in Chicago. She started the Wilma Rudolph Foundation to help children to learn about discipline and hard work. She worked as a Goodwill ambassador. She became a talk show hostess. And she passed away in 1994. This woman, I think her story, when you put it in your book, is so incredibly powerful because all of the obstacles that were in her path, she never really ever gave up, ever. And that's resilience.
Right, that's resilience. And Donna, the key factor there was her mother.
Mm-hmm.
The mother who gave her the hope, the inspiration. And whether it's Nelson Mandela, whose grandmother inspired him, or the mother of Lance Armstrong, we have to look around. Who are the secure bases? Doesn't have to be a mother. It can be a grandfather. It can be a coach. It can be a teacher. It can be a boss. It can be a radio show, talk show host like yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows how many people can be inspired by those secure bases? But wow, just hearing you repeat all those points about Wilma gives me goosebumps again. And that's why I included her story in the book, because it is so powerful. The mother refused to accept the mindset of the doctor, she'll never walk again.
And I think that when you can empower yourself with that kind of thinking, when you can say, this is where I am at this moment, this is the present moment, whether it's dealing with money, with illness, I don't care what's going on, this is where I am right now, but it's not all of it. This is just the moment right now. Transformation can occur in a split second, just in the blink of an eye, when people can change your state of mind. You have here towards the end of your book, the option to live with a hostage-free state of mind is one we can take right now. Even if we may be taken hostage physically, we can ensure that psychologically we retain our own power. That is so significant. Those two sentences, if we can just internalize them and rewire our brains with those words, that is so empowering. It gives the individual the realization, again, they are the boss. And that is really wonderful. I'd like to ask you, I know we're just about out of time, George, I'd like to ask you, do you have a website that people can go to?
Yes, I do. It's www.hostageatthetable.com. It's the same title of the book, hostageatthetable.com. And they can either go through directly through the browser or go onto Google and put the Hostage at the Table in.
Well, I want to thank you very much for being with me. It has just been such a delight. Your book is one of the most powerful books that I have read, and I go through anywhere from 600 to 800 books a year for my programming.
That's so, what Yvette told me.
Yes, and Yvette knows me well. She has sent me many, many books over the years. Hostage at the Table. My guest is George Kohlreiser. We're talking with him in Switzerland. He's a psychologist, a hostage negotiator, professor of leadership. He is going to be involved with teaching people at the UN how to communicate more effectively and to develop dialogue. His book is about how leaders, actually it's about anyone, how you can overcome conflict, influence others, and raise performance. George, do you have a final thought you would like to share with my listeners before we close?
Yes, it's the final thought that you do not ever have to lose the joy of life, no matter what has happened. There is a way to come back and find the joy of life again and live in this hostage-free state, regardless of the situation that you may find yourself in.
Well, I am just so thrilled to have had you as a guest. I want to give out your website again, hostageatthetable.com. And there is, let's see, I've got something. Well, no, I'm not going to be able to do it because we're almost out of time. I'll share it after we finish. But there is so much that you give in the book. Hostage at the Table, How Leaders Can Overcome Conflict, Influence Others, and Raise Performance. George Kohlreiser has been my guest. Kohlreiser is the correct spelling of his last name. If you want to find his book again, go to his website, hostageatthetable.com. George, thank you again so much.
Thank you, Donna. It's been a real pleasure.
This is Donna Sebo. We are going to be taking a break. Telephone lines will be open, 877-876-5227. You're not going to want to miss the other information that we've got coming up. Hostage at the Table is what we've been talking about. If you feel that life is holding you hostage, you are going to want to set yourself free. This is a must-read book, Hostage at the Table by George Kohlreiser. We're taking a break. Don't go away now. We're going to be back in just a moment. Hi, this is Donna Sebo. As we were talking in the first part of the program about not being hostage to our fears, not being hostage to various elements and components that are in our lives, George's book, Hostage at the Table, is so very impressive. I wanted to share something with you out of his book, and it's talking about living in the flow. And by the way, if you want to call in today, you can call in and chat with me at 877-876-5227, and I'd be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of insight. There's a psychologist. His name is McHaley, and he has a name that's like a mile and a half long, and I'm not even going to try to pronounce it because I don't know if it's Russian or Czechoslovakian, and I just don't want to slaughter it. But this psychologist made a statement, and George put it as a quote in his book, and we didn't have enough time to share it. This is what he said. When we sit by a river and watch the water pass by, we can see the beauty of flow in action. The water is flowing and moving naturally, sure in its direction. It has an energy, a power, and a certainty about it, a combination that exudes a sense of calm and oneness with the world. The best moments in life usually occur when a person's body or mind is stretched to its limits in a voluntary effort to accomplish something difficult and worthwhile. Those difficult moments in life where time can become plastic. And George addresses this in his book, Hostage at the Table, how many times flow occurs when our bodies, our intellects, our emotions, our spirit all combine in a natural way and hold us in a zone, and it's a timeless zone. And we'll usually experience it when we're in somewhat like a meditative state. We have greater energy, concentration, and power than when we are normally working on something. And flow helps us find enjoyment in the most routine of activities, as in repeated practice or in fine-tuning skills. And he goes in to give you some information. This is a wonderful book, a wonderful book. But when we're talking about the flow, have you ever had days where everything was just going fabulous, and then all of a sudden, the universe seemed to drop a big clump of dog poop in your life, and you go, I didn't need this. Everything was going just fine. What am I going to do with all this clump? Well, first thing is to figure out how you can clean it up. And maybe you have to take a different approach. Sometimes maybe we have to let things sort of sit for a while until we can figure out our strategies. But the reality is that life is full of challenges. And if we can live in the moment now, if we can have clarity with where we are, it can make such a difference. It really can make a difference. And let me share with you a story about how being present with where you are can make a big difference. And it's about two salesmen. And one guy's name was Joe, and the other one was Frank. They were both car salesmen. One day, they decided to have a contest. They were sort of bored with what was going on, and they decided to have a contest to see who could sell the most vehicles by the end of the day. Now, the loser would have to treat the winner to dinner. But towards the end of the day, as these two fellows were finishing up their paperwork, they realized they'd each sold the same number of cars for the same amount of money. They said to each other, looks like we're even. Well, Joe said, let's make a new objective. The last one to get all his paperwork done is the loser. Well, just a few minutes before closing for the day, there was a middle-aged gentleman who walked into the dealership. He didn't look very hot. His clothes were dirty. He was stained with grease. His fingernails were grubby. In other words, he was less than desirable in all aspects when you looked at him. And he walked towards the desk where Joe and Frank were sitting, and he said, I'm in the market for a car. Well, Joe looked at the men, and he said, okay, I'll tell you what, Frank will be more than happy to assist you. Joe decided he was going to finish the paperwork. After all, they had a contest going on. Well, Frank didn't get concerned, and he came to the man, and he said, why don't you tell me what you're in the market for? So the two of them began a tour of the showroom, and this gentleman and Frank, well, they were talking about the different cars, and the fellow climbed in and out of different cars as Frank explained all of the different features they had. A half an hour went by, and Frank and the man returned to his desk, and Frank said, Mr. Bowers, why don't you just have a seat, and let's see how we can help you. And the gentleman said, thanks, Frank. I really appreciate you taking the time to help me out this evening. Well, when Mr. Bowers left the showroom, Frank had made another sale. Joe, his associate, was really stunned. He said, well, how do you like that? I thought the guy was a derelict. And Frank looked at him, and he said, well, as usual, you thought incorrectly. Joe was complaining. He said, well, that was just lucky for you. And Frank said, luck is being prepared for the next opportunity. Hey, I'm feeling like a steak tonight. Can you handle that? Okay, Frank didn't get his paperwork done, but he came out the winner, didn't he? Joe had not been willing to step up to opportunity, and I would say that to you. Many times, opportunity comes in a guise that you cannot recognize. And how many times do we slap things down because we don't know how to look at them properly? Or we make judgments. Here was someone that had just been working very hard all day long and just happened to have a few minutes and wanted to stop in the dealership, and a sale was made because he wanted to get a vehicle. That happened to me once many years ago. I was with some people, and I was doing public appearance, and I was interacting with all kinds of people, and this one gentleman walks up, and he looked real scruffy. He looked like a person that was living on the streets. He was clean. He wasn't grubby dirty, but he was in really ragged-looking clothes. And I remember looking him straight in the eye and saying, okay, and then I gave him my perceptions as I saw them, and he looked at me and he smiled. He said, "I didn't fool you, did I?" I said, "No, because you go around dressed like this because you don't want people to know that you're worth millions of dollars." And the man just laughed out loud. So many times people will have facades. Why do they have facades? Because they're afraid or they're curious. They're wondering how you're going to handle it. Have you ever tried to communicate with someone that wears dark glasses? It's a little bit unnerving, isn't it? You want to say, "Come on, take off those glasses so I can see your eyes." Well, many times we blind ourselves to opportunities. We put on our mental dark glasses. And just remember, we have to stay alert and be aware that opportunity can come in all kinds of forms. And don't ever feel that you are not going to have that chance of opportunity. Remember, you're in this moment now. Whatever's going on in your life, good, bad, or indifferent, it is in this moment. But if you take charge of your mind, if you take charge of who you are, you're a winner. You're not a loser. You're never going to be a loser. Because you're the one that's taking and making the declaration of your own individuality and your own strength. Someone once said, "You win some, you lose some, and some get rained out, but you got to suit up for them all." So why not suit up and be prepared for the best? That's the way to go. This is Donna Sebo. I'd be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of insight today. Give me a call at 877-876-5227, and all I need from you is your first name or initial. And then after that, just let me do my thing, and I'll be happy to give you my insight. Tomorrow we're going to be talking with Mr. E. Laszlo in Tuscany, Italy. We're going to be talking about his book, The Chaos Point. And this is about a group of people who are international leaders who have decided to form an alliance for peace and healthy economic development globally. I know you'll find it fascinating and interesting, so be sure you tell your friends. Tell them about the show, because I would like for them to be aware that there are options out there. And that's what this program is all about, personally empowering you. Empowering you so that you can educate yourself and add to your mind's encyclopedia of information all kinds of new things that you never knew anything about. And next Monday, we're going to be talking about glyconutrients. We're going to be talking about nutrition with Dr. Steve Nugent. Then we're going to be talking with Andrew Lopez next week about natural pest control. We're all concerned about toxins. We want to know what we can do to do our best to use less of them in our environment. Well, Andrew's going to give us some good insight there. Then we're going to be talking about Marilyn Monroe returns. Adrian Finkelstein is going to be my guest. And then Carol Edmondson on Friday of or Thursday of next week, the Doodle Lady. She's going to be with us, and we're going to talk about how doodling can make your life different, put you in a different state of mind entirely. Lots of wonderful people. Now, remember, on bbsradio.com, you can go in and you can see, you can sign up, log on, tell your friends this. You can see all the information about my upcoming guests. You don't want to miss any of them. Let's go to our first caller today. Welcome to the show. First name or initial, and where are you calling from?
Nancy from Lacey, Washington.
All right. Now, Nancy, when I'm watching you in my mind, I'm really quite pleased with the fact that you have been dumping big time. A lot of garbage in your life. That's the word I'll use. You have said, "I have made some evaluations," and you're looking at all levels, mental, physical, emotional, and spiritual. And you are saying to yourself, "It's time. I am doing this. I'm getting things done." And step by step, methodically, you are going through your life on all levels and getting rid of the garbage. And I'm seeing you having, I don't want to say a conflictive conversation with a person, but I'll use the term agitated. And this is an individual that is aware of the changes that are occurring with you. Very, very close person. I think this is a very good friend. And they're saying to you, "Oh, my goodness, you shouldn't do this. You shouldn't do that." And they're coming at you with these verbal statements. And I'm seeing you wanting to take a tennis racket and just whack them to the moon. Well, do that in your mind, but have patience with this person. Because what's happening is that they're aware of you, and in a way, they're sort of envious of you. They're envious of the changes that they're seeing in you, and their life has so much turbulence in it, and they don't feel like they have very much control over what's going on. So as I'm watching this interchange of communication between the two of you, be a good communicator, but be a good listener. Because you're going to find that when you listen to what your friend is telling you, you're going to realize how scared they are. All you need to do is say, this is making me feel good. Thank you for giving me your opinion. But you know what? I really am happy with my results. Then move on to another topic. You're really making some good changes in your life. Take it one step at a time, just as you're doing it. It's making a difference. What question do you have for me today?
I've had so much stuff dumped on me with losing my father-in-law and my mother so close together, and I'm lost. I'm not sure how to get back on track.
All right. Tell me what you're feeling lost about.
I don't know where to turn to. I've got so much to do as far as the memorial part of my mother's funeral.
Mm-hmm.
And siblings that are having a problem with this. I'm lost.
All right, hon. We're going to be taking a break. Will you stay on the line with me?
Yes.
Wonderful. And let's see if I can help you with a little bit of this.
Thank you.
This is Donna Sebo. We are taking a break. Nancy is on the line from Lacey, Washington. Our toll-free number is 877-876-5227. Don't you go away now. We'll be back in just a moment to continue with Nancy, and we'll also share some other information with you if you like. We'll be right back right after we take this break. Hi, this is Donna Sebo, and I want to remind you, don't forget that on bbsradio.com, on our website, you can see the archive shows for the Donna Sebo Show, and also you can go in to the Donna Sebo Show and find out about all of our guests that are coming up. And if you want to call me directly, you can do that too. My office number is 800-872-8852. I've had some people inquiring if I'm available for private consultations. I am. So just know you can give me a call at my 800 number if that's something that you're interested in. Let's go back to Nancy from Lacey, Washington. And Nancy, you have a dilemma because you have gone through a very significant experience grieving over the loss of your mom, and you have ended up being the total caretaker for everything.
Yes.
And the memorial service is coming up fairly quickly, and you've got siblings. How many siblings do you have?
One.
Okay. And you're finding that you are the one that's handling it all. I would like for you to, number one, make your priorities. Did your mom have a will?
Yeah.
All right. So you've got the will.
Mm-hmm.
You've got an attorney you're interacting with. Is that correct?
Not yet.
Not yet. Okay. You may need to have the services of an attorney. When is the memorial service?
It's going to be next Saturday.
All right. It's going to be next Saturday. I would like to encourage you, if you have a friend, someone that you know is a very dependable person that you can interact with, give them a call and say, I'd like to have some support. Could you give me some of your time? And what I would like for you to do, the memorial service is first and foremost what needs to be taken care of. Did your mom name you the executor of her estate?
Yeah.
Okay, so you're the head honcho here. So you've got a positioning where your authority is pretty much established. Don't worry about your sibling at this time. The memorial service is the first part. And you need to have someone who can be with you and involved with you on this that will support you so that it is done as easily as possible without too much unnecessary fanfare. That is going to have to be taken care of first. Of course, there's all kinds of documents that have to be filed, et cetera, et cetera. So you need someone that can really help you with this. That, I think, is going to be number one. Number two is establishing if you do need legal representation, and if so, who you would call and who you would interact with. If your mother had an attorney she worked with, you might want to contact that person since they were familiar with her and helped to produce the will. If that's not the case, then you will want to find someone that you're comfortable with, because I think her will is pretty straightforward.
Yeah.
And then what you need to do is to allow, because the memorial service is going on if there's a lot of pressure for taking care of paperwork or doing things like that, just very gently say to other people, the memorial service has to be taken care of first. This is what needs to be resolved. Then, if you have an attorney, if you find you need one, you have one, they can then take you to the next step. And then that is working with all of the documents that are necessary, that have to be filed, gone through, records evaluated. And if your mother left the clear will, as I'm seeing that she did,
yeah,
then what you have, if there is something where you have to dissolve property assets, if you, when I say dissolve, I meant to say liquidate them, if you need to do that or if you want to hold off on it, know that you've got some time to work with this. And again, I encourage you, if you have someone that can assist you, this is very, very good, because you're going through a grieving process here, and the grieving process needs to be worked through. It needs to be experienced, and you need to not have to run from it or try to cover it up. However, the practical things do have to be handled, and that is where some people that you really know and trust who will be there for you, because once the memorial service is done, once that's all taken care of, then it's a shift into this other area that you don't have a lot of experience in.
Right.
So if you can have a friend, or maybe even two friends, that can help you go through documents and go through papers, this is very, very important, so everything can be organized appropriately. All paperwork filed. And if you are using an attorney to assist you, that attorney, many times, if they're experienced in dealing with estates, they will know exactly how to handle it. But this is not what I see being extremely complicated. Your sibling is going to be reacting in certain ways, and what you need to do is just to have clarity with them and saying, this is what I'm doing, this is how it's going to be handled, and make sure you keep them appraised of everything as it is going along.
Okay.
But take it one step at a time, dear, because right now you're dealing with a memorial service, and that is first and foremost in your mind.
Okay.
Do you have anybody that can help you?
Yeah, I do. I think
good.
I do, yeah.
Good. Don't be afraid to ask for other people's help, because this is always a very emotional period on so many levels for people, and you have all kinds of thoughts running through your head, and if suddenly you just start crying and you're just upset, or it's a part of the grieving expression, then that's all right. It's okay, and they'll be understanding. And that's what you need. You don't need argument. You don't need conflict. You're moving through this, and you'll do a good job.
Thank you.
You're very welcome, Nancy. Thank you for the call there.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. This is Donna Sebo, and the telephone number, I don't think we're going to have time to take another call. I wanted to share with you something. You know, I was just talking to Nancy about asking for help, and I love this story. And it's about this couple, and Paula Ford is the wife, and they live in Michigan. And she said, boy, when you're buying or selling a house, it seems like all kinds of things go wrong. And she said, our situation with our home got so complicated that we wound up having to close on our new house and move into it on the same day. Boy, wouldn't that be a headache? Well, she said, the stress was unbelievable, and she had a three-year-old and a three-month-old. So her hands were full, her husband was working, and the two of them just looked at each other and said, I don't know how we're going to handle this. How are we going to get all this done? Well, guess what? They let people know at their local church and their neighbors and said, you know, this is where we are. We need some help. They put the call out there. And on the night before the move, which happened to be a Wednesday evening, the friends came over to their home, their old home they were moving out of, packed up the whole kitchen down to the last teaspoon, she said. And the next morning, she managed to get a rental store to make sure it was okay for her friend, Liz, who volunteered to drive the moving truck to pick it up. So they did that, and then when they returned from the closing, they found that their friend Liz had wrangled the attention of some college kids, and they packed nearly the whole house and were already loading a truck when they found them there. And meanwhile, at the new place, there was another friend of theirs that was sweeping and dusting the house to get it ready for everyone. And more friends started coming in. They had all the help they need. What had been seemingly an impossible task ended up being a phenomenal blessing. There was a big fellowship of friends, and they said, wow, that shows us what community is all about. This is Donna Sebo. I'm just so glad we were able to share this hour together. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. It has been a pleasure. Don't let anything in life keep you hostage. You have the right to be free, but only you are the person that can declare that right of freedom. You're the one that makes the choice. Go out there and live it. It's yours to experience. Donna Sebo here. It's been a delight. Have a magnificent day. Talk with you tomorrow. Bye for now.